Next case is Clark McCartney versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, 2021-1007. Ms. Gentile, is it?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. VA called for a medical opinion by a specialist in radiation illnesses. What it got was an opinion by an unspecialized nurse who name-dropped a cardiologist. And the Veterans Court held it's too late to argue that VA needs to...
Well, you say name-drop, but the name of a cardiologist was on the document.
Yes, Your Honor, the name of the cardiologist was on the document with no other context. It is signed by a nurse, and the author is listed as a nurse. Veterans like Mr. McCartney have never been required to bring substantial compliance challenges before the board. That's because it's always been the board's duty and not the veterans to ensure substantial compliance. And that's an affirmative duty. The presumption of competence does not excuse the board from ensuring compliance. That's because a competent examiner won't always satisfy a board's remand order. There are two different questions. The first question is, whether this person is competent, we'll presume that and we haven't challenged it. But the second question, did the AOJ follow the board's instructions? That's a question the presumption of competence can't answer. That's a substantial compliance inquiry, and there's no presumption of compliance. It's the board's affirmative duty to ensure it. And Matthews tells us that it's a substantial compliance issue when the board reneges on its remand orders, when the board fails to perform its affirmative duty. This is not a dispute about whether the nurse or the cardiologist provided a competent opinion. And it's not a factual dispute about whether they might be close enough to the board's remand orders. The Veterans Court ended that line of questioning when it held, it doesn't matter who wrote Mr. McCartney's opinion, and we don't know. This is a legal question for the court. Does the board have a duty to ensure VA complies with its remand orders for a specialist? Stigall's made this clear for years. Of course, it's basically canon. Yes, it does. But the Veterans Court says it doesn't here. The Veterans Court says Frankway controls here. And Mr. McCartney's lost his Stigall rights. But Frankway isn't about substantial compliance at all. So Frankway is about the requirements for challenging competence, not substantial compliance. And Frankway is not an exception to Stigall. This court should hold that the board has a duty to ensure substantial compliance with its remand orders in all respects, including when it remands for a specialist.
Could you get to the argument regarding fair process?
Sure, Your Honor. So Mr. McCartney received a 90-day letter, and by the time he had received it, the board had already denied his claim. His 90-day letter set forth his right to... The beginning of his opportunity to ensure certain rights for himself, including...
I thought he got the notice, and then 9 days later, he got the final decision.
Mr. McCartney, the board, the 90-day letter was mailed 4 business days before the board denied his claim. So he received, in practice, Mr. McCartney, who lives in California, received a letter from the board after the board had already denied his claim. So his 90-day, his period to exercise his rights.
So how do we distinguish Bryant in this case?
Bryant, Your Honor, raises the issue of fair process for Mr. McCartney. Bryant reminds us that Mr. McCartney, like Mrs. Bryant, had a right to exercise these rights, including a hearing or asking for a hearing, new representation, submitting additional evidence and whatnot. Now, interestingly, Ms. Bryant when Ms. Bryant requested her extension in order to, when she requested her period of time in order to exercise her rights, did that specifically during the 90-day period. She wanted, on purpose, to exercise those rights during the 90-day period because there is a substantial difference between exercising those rights before the 90-day period, before a case has been submitted to the board, and because in that case, all of those rights happen at the AOJ level. It's a different kind of hearing. The evidence is treated differently. It probably would perpetuate the SSOC hamster wheel, whereas once the 90-day letter is received by the claimant, that is the beginning of the period of time to exercise those rights.
1304 doesn't apply to the situation, does it? At least according to the Williams case, which thoroughly deals with it.
The Williams case, Your Honor, does instruct at the Veterans Court instructed us in Williams that 1304A does not apply in this case. This court did affirm that in a non-precedential Rule 36 opinion. Now, we have argued that we do believe that Williams was wrongly decided. But even taking Williams into account that 1304A doesn't apply, Mr. McCartney still had the rights, and we know this under Quinn, and they're statutory, 7107B, right to a hearing before the board, right to even a second hearing before the board, even if his first hearing was before the board already, and it wasn't. We know from that when, regardless of whether 1304A applies, the statutes do, and his statutory rights certainly do. And he was given the reasonable expectation by the words of the 90-day letter he received that he can exercise those rights and begin exercising them at the time that he received the 90-day letter. What he didn't know was that the board had already denied his claim and foreclosed his ability to exercise those statutory rights. That's why it's a fair process violation, Your Honor.
You devoted most of your argument to 1304, which you now admit doesn't apply.
We don't admit that doesn't apply, Your Honor. We do believe that Williams was wrongly decided.
You're
however,
saying it should apply.
We do believe it should apply, yes, Your Honor. But what, regardless of that issue and regardless of the Veterans Court's holding in Williams, Mr. McCartney had his fair process rights violated as well. Now, in Mr. Williams' case, he had 42 days to exercise his rights. Mr. McCartney had 0 days. He had absolutely no I think it was 42 days. Maybe don't hold me to that exactly. But Mr. McCartney had absolutely no opportunity to exercise those rights.
Can you show us anywhere in the record that supports that statement you just made?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm having a terrible time hearing.
Can you point us anywhere in the record that supports your argument?
I argued that in my reply brief, Your Honor. So that was... I went through an explanation of the U.S. Postal Service normal delivery times and whatnot, so that by the time Mr. McCartney had received his 90-day letter, he couldn't even have responded to it in time for the board to get his response in before the board had denied his claim. If Your Honors have no additional... Oh, I'm sorry, did I...
We will save your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Koenig, is it?
Koenig.
Koenig.
Although your pronunciation is probably more authentic.
We'll follow your lead. We'll put an umlaut over it.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. First, the appellant here argues that Francois is not about substantial compliance, and we strenuously disagree with that characterization. The Veterans Court decision at page 6 indicates that the veteran raised a substantial compliance issue, essentially making the same argument that the appellant makes here, that the remand had asked for an appropriate medical specialist and that Mr. Francois did not, in fact, receive an opinion from an appropriate medical specialist. The Veterans Court, in considering that substantial compliance, still held that Mr. Francois had an obligation under the presumption of competence to raise the issue before the board. And although the Veterans Court decision, or I'm sorry, this court's decision did not specifically address substantial compliance, the Veterans Court decision certainly did. And In both decisions, the court and the Veterans Court found that there is still an obligation for the veteran to raise this issue, for the veteran to request information regarding the qualifications of the VA examiner.
Can I just see if I understand your point here, is that while it may not be universally true that substantial compliance with a remand order is subject to the Frank Way timing of assertion rule, in this case, they amount to the same thing because the order with which compliance is at issue is an order about relevant competence.
That is correct, Your Honor, because the claim that is being made in this case is that the qualifications of the VA examiner, that the person who was chosen by the VA to give the medical opinion, was not sufficient or not in compliance with the remand order. It's still the claim is about the qualifications of the VA examiner. And this court in Frankway explicitly held that even in the context of a remand, even in the context of a remand order for an appropriate medical specialist, that obligation on the veteran to challenge the qualifications before the board still applies. And this court's decision is consistent with the decision in Parks and the decision in Sickles and the other cases in which we cited in our brief that have similarly held that there is an obligation on the veteran to raise the issue before the board, to at least request the information of the qualifications of the
examiner. Right, but Frankway, to some extent, was an effort to put Parks and Sickle behind us, and because there was some question of whether those decisions had gone too far.
Yes, Your Honor, there it is certainly more recent than those other decisions, and
isn't there even an en banc footnote in it?
There is, Your Honor, and the en banc footnote says that this should be considered a requirement rather than a presumption of competence. But there is still a requirement on the veteran to raise the issue in the first instance before the board, and
that's to prevent surprise, bringing up the argument later. I mean, in this situation, the only issue that they were concerned with was the competency issue. And are you saying that by not given an opportunity to respond to that, that the VA was somehow surprised?
Well, Your Honor, the veteran certainly had an opportunity to respond to the competency issue, or at least to request information regarding the competency issue.
The veteran here was given notice that said you have X amount of days in which to raise the issue, but apparently the decision had already been made at that point.
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that letter is not the not the critical time period in which the veteran had to discuss this issue. The veteran received a supplemental statement of the case in March.
The letter was an error, right?
The letter errantly cited to 2013-04, yes, but the letter was simply a notice that the case had resumed its place on the board's docket, but the veteran received a supplemental statement of the case in March of 2018, 5 months before the board decision. And the regulations that do apply on remand, 1931, 1938, and 2302, those regulations all are dealing with the supplemental statement of the case. That is the critical portion of this process on remand. The veteran received the supplemental statement of the case. It referenced the medical opinion and summarized the medical opinion, and Mr. McCartney could have, at that point, requested information relating to the qualifications of the examiner. He had
and if there had indeed been a problem, it could have been corrected at that level.
Yes, Your Honor. Or at least the issue would have been properly raised at that time.
Could it have been corrected? I mean, you really do have to say something could be done. Otherwise, there is absolutely no point.
Yes, Your Honor. The veteran, by regulation, is given 30 days following the supplemental statement of the case to request additional information or provide additional information that could potentially change the outcome of the case, yes. Okay. And Mr. McCartney did, in fact, provide additional information during that 30-day period that he received.
An evidentiary submission, but not a new argument, not new comments?
He provided additional information, but did not... The information provided did not relate to the qualifications of the examiner. He did not challenge the qualifications of the examiner at that time, nor did he simply request information relating to the qualifications of the examiner at that time.
Can I turn you to this fair process piece of it, not the frank way, substantial compliance piece, but the fair process? Is there a statutory right to an opportunity to submit evidence at the board level in the return circumstance presented here?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any statutory right that would grant a veteran an opportunity or specific time period with which to provide additional evidence.
Let's assume for a moment that, in fact, in this case, before he even received the notice that the matter was back before the board issued his decision. Would that violate some statutory right?
No, Your Honor, it would not, because the statutes and regulations dealing with a case remand.
Forget about the regulations.
But when you're dealing with a case on remand, there are a different set of rules applies. And those all focus on the supplemental statement of the case rather than once the case has gotten to the board.
And right, but I think Ms. Gentile emphasized the statutory. Whether she mentioned 7105 or 7107 or what.
Your Honor, in the appellant's brief, they cite to a number of statutes, including 7105, 7107, and 59101 to 104, I believe.
Yes.
None of those statutes provides a right to have 90 days to submit evidence on remand.
Forget about the 90 days. Do they supply a right to make comment to or supply evidence to the board when a matter is returned to the board after a remand?
Your Honor, my reading of the statutes is that none of them apply to cases on remand, and none of them provide the rights that Mr. McCartney has claimed in this case. 5901 to 5904 all discuss representation issues and the right to request changes in representation and recognition of representation and things of that nature. 7107 addresses the right to a hearing and says that the board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for a hearing. 7105 talks about it does talk about providing evidence, but does not address cases on remand either. So our opinion would be that none of the statutes that the appellant has cited in this case provide the appellant with the rights that it's claiming in this case. The right to fair process, as the Veterans Court decision in Williams discussed, is a right to participate in the process. And on remand, the focus is on the supplemental statement of the case and the 30 days following the supplemental statement of the case, which provide the veteran a time period, the 30 days in which to submit additional evidence or request additional information or make any additional arguments.
If your opponent disagrees with you, I'm sure on rebuttal she will give us chapter and verse.
I can only assume. So we believe that the Veterans Court decision, which this court affirmed, resolves the issue of the quote-unquote 90-day rights, which Mr. McCartney is claiming. If your honors have any further questions, I'm happy to answer.
Yeah, I have a question. Now, you argue that Bryant versus Wilkie doesn't apply in this case because in that case, 1304 did apply, and in this case, it does not. But in Bryant, the court also went on and spoke about and says that we conclude that the board's actions in this case deprived him of his non-constitutional right to a fair process. So just in terms of a fair process, is Bryant distinguishable from this case?
Your Honor, yes, I believe that Bryant is distinguishable as a factual matter because in Bryant, the appellant had indicated a desire to make additional arguments. And in this case, there is nothing.
But isn't that forcing a veteran to decide early what they're going to do without even knowing whether they should do that or not? I mean, how can you say, I'm going to raise an appeal and I'm going to argue these three different points, and you don't even know what the ultimate decision of the board is. Are we putting too big of a burden on the veterans to decide early in the ball game what they're going to do and to notify the VA? Why shouldn't we wait until they actually get have the full opportunity of the time period that they've been notified that they have to make their argument?
Your Honor, I believe, again, that the relevant time period is actually the time period after the submission of the supplemental statement of the case, which occurred in March of 2018 in this case. Whether the board decision came 6 days or 40 days or 90 days after the notice letter, after the resumption of the place on the docket, the veteran has no more information than they did at the time of the supplemental statement of the case. That's the time period.
How do you know that?
Well, because the supplemental statement of the case is the VA's.
Maybe they could have Googled the doctor and found out that, wait a minute, there's a problem here. This isn't a cardiologist. It's a nurse.
In getting the supplemental statement of the case, the veteran could have requested the medical opinion, or the veteran could have requested the qualifications at that time period, and. I don't believe that the veteran has argued that
these aren't lawyers. These are just everyday people that have that are veterans.
Yes, Your Honor.
And in this case, the veteran was informed that you got X amount of days in which to appeal. They get that. And on the other hand, a few days later, they get the answer. It says the final decision.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, the letter was simply a notice that the case was going back to the board, which was something that the veteran would have been aware of after getting the supplemental statement of the case.
But
maybe not the exact time.
Did that letter say you have X amount of days in which to gather new information or submit new information?
Well, Your Honor, no, it does not provide for 90 days. The regulation that was errantly cited in the letter still doesn't provide for a 90-day period. The regulation states that the appellant will be granted a period of 90 days following the mailing of the notice or until the date that the appellate decision is promulgated by the board, whichever comes first. So even the regulation itself doesn't provide a strict 90-day period in which to provide evidence. The regulation itself provides for a maximum time period of 90 days and indicates that it informs the veteran that the decision could come earlier than 90 days. And as we've argued, that regulation simply doesn't apply in this case. I see that I'm over my time, but if there are any further questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Gentile has some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, I've always thought of substantial compliance and competence as a Venn diagram. There are certain instances where maybe these two circles completely overlap. This isn't one of them.
But we don't need complete overlap. All we need is some overlap. Why isn't this case in the overlap area?
Because of the specificity of the board's remand orders, Your Honor. The board called for a particular type of examiner. Now, whether that examiner is competent, whoever this person is, the nurse practitioner, the cardiologist, somebody else, whether that person is competent to write an exam, which is all 3.159 requires, competent to perform an examination, is a separate question from whether it's a particular type of person that the board told the AOJ to go find. And it's also invoking different rights and duties on behalf of the claimant and
the board.
But
wasn't the remand order be competent in assessing a problem here? What's the difference, namely the effect of exposure to radiation on the heart?
The remand order...
Why is that different?
The remand order... it's always implicit in a remand order that a competent examiner should be found. This remand order also called for a radiologist or another specialist qualified to opine on the effects of human radiation of radiation on the human body. We don't know, and this is also an important fact in Mr. McCartney's case, we don't know who wrote that opinion, which means... it is impossible for the board to have ensured substantial compliance with its remand orders. Ensuring substantial compliance isn't just words on a paper. That's an action. When we don't know who the board actually got, after it called for a really particular type of person, when we don't know who the board actually got...
Shouldn't you have put that in your response to the supplemental statement of the case?
No, Your Honor. Well, at the time, I will point out, factually speaking, Mr. McCartney was unrepresented. Which is an important part of this because this is an ex parte system. But Mr. McCartney never saw his exam until he had appealed to the court and received his record before the agency. That's the first time he ever saw his examination. The SSOC, while it referenced an exam, never said who wrote it and never provided a copy of the exam.
Could he have gotten that by asking?
It depends when he, if he wanted to, or if he tried, it depends on when he made that request. VA would have had a duty, generally speaking, to turn that exam over to Mr. McCartney. Now, that does get into why Mr. McCartney was harmed by his inability to submit anything at all to the board. I do respectfully to my opposing counsel. I do disagree with her statement that there is no statutory right in play here. Quinn makes it very clear that 7107, the right to a hearing before the board, that's a statutory right. VA cannot abrogate that right, even if a hearing has already taken place once. That's very straightforward. Now, at that time, during that period of time, which is some period of time after Mr. McCartney received the 90-day letter, he had the right to exercise that right to a hearing. Once that became impossible, because the board made its decision so quickly, Mr. McCartney's fair process rights and his 7107 right was violated. Unless your honors have any additional questions, I'm...
Thank you, counsel. No one ever loses points by not using up all her time. We'll take the case under submission.
Thanks, Your Honor.